Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. If you pay any attention to health news, we're bombarded with claims about health and wellness. Claims for maintaining our health and for products that can restore us to a healthy state if we somehow feel out of balance. One of the things I've found over the years as a doctor is that there really are no shortcuts to good health. The formula has always been and remains simple: eating right, sleeping enough, and moving our bodies enough to both burn calories and burnish our mental health. Billions of dollars are expended in the pursuit of these simple solutions, and loads of marketing comes at us to convince us that there are proprietary methods or medications that may make these activities easier for us. My guest today has devoted his career to teaching methods of self-efficacy. That is, the idea that eating healthily, sleeping, and exercising enough is innate to all of us, provided we have the knowledge and tools to perform them without letting commercial products or the medical industrial system get in the way. James Gordon is a Harvard-educated psychiatrist and a world-renowned expert in using mind-body medicine to heal depression, anxiety, and psychological trauma. He's the founder and executive director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine and a clinical professor in the departments of psychiatry and family medicine at Georgetown Medical School. Dr. Gordon served as the first chairman of the Program Advisory Council to the National Institutes of Health's Office of Alternative Medicine and as chairman of the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine Policy under Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. I spoke with him by phone from his center in Washington, where he was fresh from another training session focused on training health professionals in the methods of mind-body medicine. Dr. James Gordon of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Dr. James Gordon, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start and just have you tell us what is meant by mind-body medicine.
Mind-body medicine is based on the understanding and the science that shows the complete interconnection between how our bodies function and what we think and feel, how we look at the world. And mind-body medicine is really a way of describing the language that we learn about how this communication takes place and being able to enter into this continual conversation between mind and body. And even when I say it that way, it's a kind of artificial separation. But it's learning to use techniques that mobilize the mind to affect the body and to affect itself, and techniques that you can use for your body, like movement and exercise, that affect your emotions and how you think and how you look at the world. So mind-body medicine says we are a whole human being, and we can learn how to help and heal ourselves with very basic techniques that work on our biology and our psychology.
And so 25 years ago now, you started your very own center devoted to this, the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, and you're headquartered there in Washington, D.C., but have offshoot branches in other countries, actually. What's the mission of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine in addition to trying to help sufferers? You're really, in a sense, trying to train the trainers, are you not?
We are trying to train the trainers. Hopefully we're doing it. Our basic mission, when I started out 25 years ago, what I was interested in is, and this may sound a bit immodest, but I was interested in making self-awareness, self-care, and group support central to all healthcare, to the training of all health professionals, and to the education of our children. And that seemed crucial to me because most of the problems that most of us have all the time, most of the chronic problems that we have, there's no magic bullet. There's no simple solution to them. But the solutions we're discovering, and we have especially been realizing this over the last 50 years or so, the solutions have to come from within us. There is no drug or procedure that really does the job for conditions like type 2 diabetes or many cardiovascular diseases or depression or anxiety or chronic pain. Whereas on the other hand, those things we can learn to do to help ourselves and having the support of other people who are also learning can make profound differences in not only in treating these conditions if you have them, but also in preventing the conditions from arising. In addition to that perspective on self-care and group support, I also wanted to create a community of healers and a healing community. That is, I wanted to work in a place where people really supported each other and where we felt better ourselves as we were helping other people feel better, and where we could really come together and work together and sort of live and work in a way that was healthy for ourselves as well as for the communities that we worked in.
So I certainly identify with that type of mission. I mean, it's to be certainly lauded. I guess one thing it makes me wonder is when you started back in 1991, was the formation of the center or the philosophy of sort of adopting mind-body medicine, was that in reaction to something or, you know, to what you might call more orthodox or conventional medicine?
Well, I had actually been doing the work for 20 years before that. I'd been a researcher at the National Institute of Mental Health and back in 1971. And although my first work was with, I was working with runaway and homeless kids on the street, and eventually I headed up a national program for runaway and homeless kids. And it was clear to me in working with them, just the way it had been clear to me in working with psychiatric patients, that our diagnostic way of approaching, certainly these kids and many of the patients with whom I worked, it was too narrow. It was confining to them, and it wasn't getting the good results that I hoped for. Whereas when I could help people maximize their own capacity to help themselves and to help each other, we really got much better results. People felt better about themselves, and they felt better generally, whether they were runaway and homeless kids or adults who were, you know, severely troubled with diagnoses of depression or bipolar disorder. It didn't mean that you never used medication, but it meant that the primary treatment was really helping people to help themselves. This was what I was discovering in working with other people, and also for myself. I got interested in, I'd been in psychotherapy, I'd been in psychoanalysis when I was a psychiatric resident, but I was interested in, okay, what else is there? What beyond this psychotherapy, which I found enormously valuable, but how else can I understand myself, and how can I help myself not only psychologically, but also biologically? For example, I had bad allergies, and I had a bad back. And conventional medicine really only had symptomatic relief. So from a personal standpoint, I was interested in relieving my discomfort, my pain, my stuffed nose. And I was also interested, just out of curiosity, what else is there beyond talking about and experiencing my ideas about myself and my emotions? So I began to look at meditation and to begin to find real peace and a real understanding doing meditation. This is back in 1972, 73. I began to do yoga back then. And then it just felt, my body felt better and looser, and starting to do Tai Chi. And that helped my athletics injured knees. And I began to change my diet. And I could see if I ate one way, my head was a little clearer and I felt a little bit better than if I ate the conventional way that I'd been eating up till that point. So I got interested personally, I got interested professionally, and from your question, you understand that in the beginning, people were wondering just what I was up to. Why are you so interested in this? I'm saying, I'm interested in it because I believe these things may be helpful. I want to bring a scientific approach to exploring whether they're helpful, as well as an experiential approach. And this is what interests me. I'm interested in expanding the boundaries of medicine and psychiatry and finding out what really works for me and for patients I work with. And I was an employee of the U.S. government for the American people. I saw that as my job. And so my bosses at NIMH said, okay, that makes sense. Go ahead and do it. And so I did. And I, continued to do that after I left at NIMH after 11 years there.
So tell us a little bit about the scope of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. I mean, how big of an institution is it, or how many people are you treating, or is it much more of a, you're bringing different types of medical practitioners in to train them in your methods and then sending them back out into their communities to work?
It's more like the second description that you just gave. What we are, from the beginning, I decided that I wanted to be primarily an educational institution. That is, to train other people and help them use what we had to teach in their own institutions, in their own organizations, in their own communities. So our work is always about education. Then it's also where we have worked, and I'll talk about this in a moment, in particular countries where there have been wars or natural disasters, or in communities that are under stress, we want to train a large number of people and to help them establish programs that serve their whole community. So it's a kind of hybrid. Our major focus is on training, but in places like Gaza, Israel, Kosovo, Haiti, southern Louisiana, Pine Ridge Reservation, large numbers of people we've trained are using our work with sometimes very large numbers of people. So we've trained in mind-body medicine over the last 25 years, and it's been increasing in recent years. Probably now it's close to 6,000 people, most of whom are health and mental health professionals, but we also have teachers, we have community leaders, leaders of women's groups, we have clergy, we have the people, peer counselors. For example, we train a number of veterans who are coming back in Iraq and Afghanistan, or Vietnam veterans who are working with other veterans. In some countries, for example, in Haiti, where there are very few mental health professionals, we train not only priests and nuns and Protestant ministers, but also voodoo healers. And in the countryside, we train the leaders in the community. Sometimes they're truck drivers, sometimes they're farmers, sometimes they're, you know, women with big families, but they're intelligent people and they want to learn what we have to teach. They want to learn the basic science of it and they want to share it with their communities. So we actually have a small full-time paid staff of about, here in D.C., about 18 people. We have five staff, full-time staff in the Gaza Strip. We have five full-time staff in Haiti. We have part-time staff in those places as well who are supervise our work. But we work a lot through our international faculty. We have a faculty of about 160 who we can call on for our trainings in mind-body medicine and also the training in nutrition that we do. And they all have day jobs. I mean, some teach in medical schools. Others are work in hospitals or clinics, or they're educators, or they're leaders of women's groups. So we bring them together for 1 or 2 or 4 or 6 weeks a year to work with us on the projects we do, wherever we do them in the world. And that way, we're able to mobilize this significant faculty, train many people, and then the people we train may work with very large numbers. Our biggest program is in Gaza, where we've trained, fully trained, about 700 people, and there are 300 more who are going through our training now. And we've worked with about 160,000 children and adults in Gaza over the last 10 years or so, 10, 11 years. So it's a big program, and it's getting bigger all the time.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dr. James Gordon. He's the founder and executive director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. And we're discussing the origins of the center and his approach to integrative medicine, where the mind and the body are together using all kinds of techniques. You mentioned yoga, Jim Gordon. You mentioned meditation as key. And what's interesting to me is you have expanded essentially and are teaching folks, community leaders and health practitioners and other teachers, women's groups leaders in conflict zones or former conflict zones, Kosovo. But you mentioned having permanent staff in Gaza and Haiti, and those are interesting places. I think of them as very sort of, you know, places with a lack of, you know, what we would consider infrastructure, you know, clean water or sewage or things like that. Of course, probably a lot of that is bias from media impressions. But how did your work make its way to Gaza or Haiti originally? Were you invited in or brought there under like an NGO type of auspice to try to help traumatized victims of war, or in the case of Haiti, earthquake? Or,
well, you know, your observation is there are major difficulties with the infrastructure, major difficulties certainly in Haiti with water and services of every imaginable kind. You know what, those the places that we've gone in the beginning and for, you know, and still at times, they have been places that I've wanted to go, places where I saw and felt a need. And for example, Haiti, I had never thought of going to Haiti before. I never thought, you know, because Haiti is, you know, as you suggested, is a formidable challenge. It's the most poverty-stricken place in the Western Hemisphere, very difficult place where, you know, to really make change. And yet, when the earthquake happened there, I thought, my God, I can't not go there. We have a method, a way of dealing with population-wide trauma, which had already been very successful. It had worked well in Bosnia and some in Macedonia, extremely well in Kosovo. We used it with New York City firefighters after 9/11 in Israel and in Gaza. You know, and we were using it in southern Louisiana after Katrina, and it was working really well. And I thought, I cannot not go there. We have something that's different from what anyone else is doing. It works. The need is enormous, and those are my brothers and sisters in Haiti. So I went to Haiti. I had one name of one person who was actually a good contact, and she began to introduce me to people in the healthcare system, to people who were running orphanages, and I would go to those people. I'd go to the CEO of the General Hospital in Port-au-Prince, and I'd sit with him. You know, they weren't even working inside the hospital because of how damaged it was, and they were afraid of tremors. So I'd sit with him in this one little, either in the courtyard or in this one little place that seemed safe, and I would teach him slow, deep breathing and talk about our work. And he said, oh, that sounds interesting. I think we need that. None of us are sleeping. We're all, you know, we're upset with each other all the time. We're totally stressed out. So, yes, please come here. I'd love you to work with our staff. And the same, one of the bishops in Haiti whom I was introduced to, a Catholic bishop, he had the same kind of feeling. So we began to work with Caritas, the sort of service arm of the Catholic Church. And it just kind of goes like that. It's going someplace, and the same in Gaza. I got interested after our work had been very successful in Kosovo. We had we trained 600 people in Kosovo in this model, which includes several different kinds of meditation and guided mental imagery and self-expression and words, drawings and movement and some yoga and some group support. This model was working so well in Kosovo, working on a large scale. We were publishing research in very good journals showing that we could reduce post-traumatic stress disorder by 80% in our groups when the groups were led by rural high school teachers, not by psychiatrists or psychologists. Things were going really well in Kosovo, and I thought, well, where else can we go? Where else would it be good to go? And so I looked around, and I thought about it, and then I did get in Gaza and Israel, I got emails from a Palestinian psychologist and from an Israeli psychologist that were very similar. I thought, I had moments of wondering whether they'd collaborated, which is highly unlikely. They didn't even know each other, but their emails were very similar. Both said, we're very good clinicians, we work with very good clinicians, we're very good at working with individuals, we're even good at working with groups, but we are overwhelmed by, quote, the situation, which is what everybody calls the sort of ongoing tension and conflict between Israelis and Palestinians. And we're especially concerned because our kids are so upset and so angry. We've read about what you've done in Kosovo. Would you consider coming here and training us? So I thought, okay, those are pretty clear signs. And just about everybody wants to see if they can do anything to help the Israeli-Palestinian conflict resolve itself. So I thought, okay, let me start talking with people there. And I went on my own nickel and, you know, began to meet people in Israel and the West Bank and Gaza. And Gaza seemed much more troubled and difficult and in much worse shape than the West Bank. So I thought, okay, let me work in Gaza and let me establish a parallel program in Israel. And so we were able to do that and eventually able to get funding for it. And that's the way we began. But it really begins... And for me, it's begun sometimes with an invitation, sometimes just with a need that seems so painfully obvious. You know, as I've gained confidence in the effectiveness of our work in these very troubled places, I feel very comfortable going anywhere that anybody might be interested in having us come, or even saying, you know, as we said with Syrian refugees, I said, you know, nobody invited me to go to Jordan and work with Syrian refugees. But the need is obviously enormous. And once I got there and I was spending time in the refugee camps that were run by the UN and spending time with refugees in Amman and other cities in Jordan, everybody was saying, the doctors were saying, look, major immediate problems, yes, they need us for new surgery or ophthalmology or to treat infectious disease, but the biggest, worst long-term problem are the psychological issues. So, yes, we need you. So it's that kind of thing. It's sort of a combination of invitation and seeing and being moved by a need.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dr. Jim Gordon. He is the founder and executive director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. And Jim, I was pointed to your most recent book. It's from a couple of years ago now. It's called Unstuck. And this is a book that's really sort of a how-to, a guided journey out of depression. And you are trained in psychiatry, so you're certainly familiar with the construct of depression, but you have some really interesting thoughts. For example, that, you know, you don't consider depression a disease per se, like I think we have come to generally accept, certainly in the world of medicine, and I think even in popular culture. I mean, we have treatments for depression, we have clear diagnostic criteria, but your approach, I would say, is probably more holistic and involves, you know, the body as much as the mind. You try to do away with that duality. How did you come, I guess, to, well, actually, you talk about it in the preface, actually, that you you experienced this yourself as a young man. You'd had a severe breakup with a girlfriend, and you found yourself not being able to sleep and really not being able to function.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I had a breakup. My girlfriend, and she was right. We were just having a hard time, and so eventually, you know, both of us were kind of, it just wasn't working. And so she said, you know, we got to stop, at least for now. We just can't do it. And the combination of the breakup, which really hit me, and also my own uncertainty about, you know, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be helpful to other people. I was interested in that. But my own discomfort in medical school in the first couple of years led me to feel, I was depressed, but I was also in a kind of identity crisis. You know, who am I? What am I doing here? I had all the, you know, the symptoms of depression, of being really, it wasn't just questioning, you know, what am I doing here? It was like, oh, I'm not going to get better. I'm really not such a good guy. I can't sleep. I really can't focus. I don't, you know, I just feel miserable. So I was going, and I had, in the beginning, I had physical symptoms. I was exhausted for no obvious discernible medical reason. So yeah, I was feeling terrible. And I went into psychotherapy with a wonderful therapist, a man named Robert Coles, who was a professor. He was then a young psychiatrist at Harvard, and he became a very well-known professor there. He was also working with black kids in New Orleans who were trying to integrate the schools. This was 1964. And they were going through these terrible mobs. Anyway, so Bob was both a wonderful therapist. He was also an inspiration and an example. And he, to his credit, he was very empathetic, but he also didn't take what I was going through too seriously. I don't know if I can convey that. I mean, he'd been through something like it himself. I mean, sort of, so he understood me. You know, but it wasn't like he had the somberness of this is a major depressive disorder and it's really serious. It was like, you're going through a really bad time. And there are reasons for it right now. There are reasons for it in your history and some of the, you know, early difficulties in your family. And you can understand those and you can move ahead. So that was enormously helpful to me to come through that without medication. Really taking some time to look at myself, to understand myself, to begin to learn how to take better care of myself. So right from that time on, I began to understand through my experience with Bob, through reading that I was doing at the time. He, as we used to say in the 60s, he turned me on to R.D. Lang. I don't know, do you know Lang's work at all?
I do not.
He's very interesting. He was a major figure in the culture of the 1960s, and he really had a view of, he worked a lot with psychotic people. He wrote a wonderful book about kind of withdrawn schizoid people called The Divided Self. And he came out of, aside from a sort of psychoanalytic tradition, he was also influenced by existentialism, as was I. And so the focus was really on, okay, what's going on right here and now? Let's not bring the lens of psychopathology so heavily to a condition, whether it's depression or any other condition. Let's look at the human experience that's here. Let's look at the relationship we can create between the doctor or the therapist and the patient or the client. And let's look at this as an opportunity for mutual discovery, for self-discovery and mutual discovery. So that was there in the existentialist tradition and in Lang. And I was reading that and having my own experience. So it became clear to me that, and then as I began both initially as a medical student and then as a resident, it became clear to me that if I adopted this attitude, that what people were going through was an experience from which they could learn. Didn't mean they weren't depressed and couldn't be diagnosed as depressed, but that wasn't necessarily, the diagnosis shouldn't become a prism. It's a prism, not a prison, if you understand. So it's a way of looking at the symptoms, but it shouldn't be, Lang used to call diagnosis a judicial sentence, like a judicial sentence, like you're sentenced to depression. But it's not. It's something that you're going through. And so I began to become very interested in how people could learn from what they're going through, how I had and how I could, and then what are the techniques, what are the approaches that can help people with this process of learning, help them change on a psychological, a biological, and even a spiritual basis. For example, physical exercise and movement, I knew from my own experience, they made me feel better. Well, in the 40 years since then, there's been a whole lot of research showing that physical exercise and movement is as good a therapy for major depressive disorder as the best psychotherapy or the best use of psychopharmacology without the negative side effects of drugs. So physical exercise is really a powerful therapeutic intervention. It changes the levels of the neurotransmitters, the brain chemicals that we're trying to change with psychopharmacology with none of the downside. So that's just one therapy. And what about meditation? Meditation is a way of quieting the stress, which is the major factor in depression, as well as in virtually every psychological and physical condition. So you can use meditation to quiet the stress, to quiet your fear and agitation, and to enhance functioning, that fear and agitation in the emotional part of the brain, a region called, you know, that listeners may want to know, it's called the amygdala. It's in the emotional part of the brain. And you quiet it with meditation, and you also stimulate activity in the frontal part of the cerebral cortex that improves judgment, self-awareness, and compassion. So these are approaches that make profound biological as well as psychological change, have profound benefits that people can learn to do for themselves. So I got very interested with how to put together a comprehensive approach that people can use for depression, for anxiety, and also as part of the treatment, regardless of the psychiatric diagnosis. Same approach works very well for kids with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It is helpful. I wouldn't say it's necessarily the full approach, but can be very helpful for people who have psychotic disorders as well. It can be integrated into their training. It can be very helpful for people with virtually every kind of chronic physical illness. So my focus in Unstuck is on depression, but this is an approach that is helping to bring our minds and bodies into homeostasis, into balance. And so it's useful in treating any chronic stress-related condition.
Dr. James Gordon is founder and executive director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine in Washington, D.C., and he joined us by phone today. For more information on the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, you can see their website at cmbm.org. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. If you've missed any of our shows, you can always listen online anytime. Just stream them on your smartphone, tablet, or computer. Go to studiotulsa.org. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.